What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination? Or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. This episode, I speak with Todd Tillman. Todd Tillman is most well known as the winner of the 18th season of NBC's The Voice. We discuss a lot in this interview. We discuss his new single, Dig My Grave, what it was like winning The Voice, what he did afterwards, and of course, what it was like going on and what he was feeling. This was a fun one, and I think you'll enjoy it. And now I give you Todd Tillman. Okay, I'm here with Todd Tillman. Todd, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, that's my pleasure. I'm excited to chat with you.
Yeah.
I'm happy to have you on. I guess real quick, just for anyone who might not be familiar with you, please tell listeners briefly who you are and what you do.
Okay, I'm Todd Tillman. It's weird, I guess, in order of importance, you know, what I do in this world. I'm a husband and dad, but I'm a singer and a performer, and I travel around doing that. I think most people who know me now probably know me because I won The Voice, season 18 on The Voice a couple of years ago. So I did that. I do tons of things, though. It's a tough question.
sort of encapsulates everything and nothing at the same time, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's so many things we do. I mean, I've authored a book and I have a couple of other things. So.
Sure. So winding the clock back then, Todd, I'm curious, when did you first discover your passion and talent for music?
Oh, man. So I started singing when I was just a little kid. Like I was probably like 8, I think was the first time I sang. It's weird. I tell the story all the time. I still second guess whether I was 8 or 9, but I'm pretty sure I was 8, you know, the first time I sang. But as far as discovering a passion for it, I probably would have been in my teen years before I realized that I really loved to do it. And based on the response of the people in the room, which 99% of the time, well, 100% really was at church. But based on the response of the people in the room, I felt like I guess I did okay at it. You know, I mean, I felt like it was good, but I feel like everybody who sings thinks it's good. Not all of us are. You know, so I mean, I felt like it was good, but I kind of, you know, based it off of how people would react when I did it. And so it had been in my teen years that I kind of really started thinking, man, this is something I love to do.
Yeah, very cool. Now, was it something that you, how did you foster it? Did you do any official vocal training?
No, it's wild, you know, and when I say that, I don't want to put myself in any kind of special category. Lots of people better than me never did any vocal training. But what I did was, I mean, really there, it's sort of like a little recipe that I didn't realize was a recipe at the time. It's just what I did, you know. I don't know. Again, I don't know if this is in order, but one of the things I would do is I would emulate people that I loved. You know, I would listen to like, I really, really love, I mean, I love so much different kinds of music, but I really love like old school, like gospel where they do all the runs and the things. And so I would try those things, you know, that's one way. And then the other thing that I've always done, and this is the advice I give people when they ask me, because I don't know, it's almost like I've had, oh my gosh, several people ask me about vocal lessons
at my, right.
I don't know how to teach it. No, I don't know. So what the advice I always give them is like, just the other thing I did is just, I would just go for it. You know, you're going to miss a note. You're going to miss a run. It's going to be a hair too high, you know, and you thought you could hit it, but just go for it and put it all out there. You know, and sometimes you fly and sometimes you fall, but you just, you know, take your best shot. That's what I've been doing this whole time.
Wonderful. Yeah. Great, great life advice in general, isn't it? Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just go for it.
So, I can't have you on and not talk about The Voice, can I?
Sure.
What was it that made you decide to try out for The Voice?
You know, more than one thing again, but for lack of a better answer, I kind of wonder, I still to this day, I think I might have had a midlife crisis, you know, like I'm still the oldest person to ever win the show. You know, I'm kind of, that's a title I'm kind of eager to get rid of, but if I ever will. But I am. But really, in all honesty, I was at a really pivotal time in my life mentally and emotionally. Just like the inner man, I was in a lot of, I hate to use the word turmoil. I mean, I don't know that I was in turmoil as much as I just was not in peace. And I just new. I don't know. I tell everybody, you can probably relate because you're an adult, but the younger the adult, the less they can relate. But you get to these places in your life where you just know something's got to change. You don't know what it is or what's going on. You just, something's got to give. It's got to change, you know? And that's where I was. So I really started, and I don't mean to say that, but like, so I just went and won the voice, you know? That's you know, what I did was I just started searching into some other things to do with my life. I kind of landed, quote unquote, on real estate. I was going to start studying to be a real estate agent. I was playing piano. I'm not good at playing piano, but I can bang chords out, you know? So I was like playing piano and singing songs on Instagram. And this would have been in the springtime of 2019. A friend sent the online registration to audition, open call audition for The Voice. And so I signed up for it, but the audition wasn't until the end of summer. And so I changed my mind and decided not to go because, you know, I'm always really frank about it and honest. I don't want anybody to feel like I'm trying to be pitiful or gain anybody's pity or, you know, or anything like that. Just the truth. I kind of felt like they were looking for people who are young and beautiful and talented. And all I had was the talented part, you know, I wasn't either one of the other things. And so I kind of decided not to go. And at that point, because I'm saying this to you, because the world at large, there's like a general narrative and it's true, but I always try to clarify everything building up to it. The general narrative is my wife pushed me to go.
Right.
And she did, but that was after I was going to go. And then I decided not to go. That's when she chimed in and she just reminded me of all the things we always told our kids about taking risks and doing crazy things and giving it a shot. She reminded me of all that stuff. And so, you know, I couldn't really, then I just had to, you know, it's almost like you can't argue with your own self, you know? And so she reminded me of all the things I try to teach our kids or best I can at least. And so I went and that's how you know, it was just open call audition, stood in line all day and all those things. I really never did. And I'm not trying to garner any pity. I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
I just really never thought that singing, like I could do it and as a living, like I just love to do it. And even now though, you know, that's all, I mean, I don't want to say that's all I do. God, we do tons of things, but I will say even now I've heard, you know, and I don't want to get in trouble with any of your listeners, but I always say like, some of the worst advice anybody ever gave me was if you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life because man, look, I love what I do, but I work really hard.
It's still a job, right?
Yeah.
I get it.
I'm loving it, man, but I work so hard. I don't know what they talk about.
Yeah. You, an issue, you know, comes up, you start your day or whatever, and you're already exasperated thinking, God, it's only 9 a.m., you know?
Yeah. And then it's just like just about the time your heart rate settles and you chill, then you got to hit the road again and go, you know, to Timbuktu or wherever you go.
Right. Right. So then, you know, for that audition, The Voice, I'm curious, how did you deal with your nerves or were you even nervous?
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I was bad. I get nervous before I take the stage anytime, anywhere, period. You know, now, you know, there's always a level. Now, there are different levels of The Voice, certainly with another level, you know. So I don't want to say that I did deal with them. I know I remember very vividly my blind audition backstage, you know, all day. Well, let me say all day, even all the preparation that we do for a blind audition, I spent a lot of time with my anxiety. It would sort of ebb and flow, you know, and it would just rise up. And in those moments, I would always just remind myself that whatever this is and whatever it's supposed to be, it's already written. It is what it is. And it's going to be what it's going to be. But now when the blind audition actually came around and I was backstage, I no kidding, man, I was dying. Like, it's like you want to go sit on the toilet and also puke at the same time, you know, and I was just dying. So I don't know that I dealt with it. All I can tell you is when I took the stage, anytime you watch The Voice or anybody that you talk to that's been part of it, and you know, the sort of alumni of the show, if you only count winners, there's 22 of us, I guess. But if you count everyone, man, there's hundreds of people now that are sure it's alumni. And if you talk to any of them, they'll tell you when you take the stage, it's just silent. The room is silent. There's no applause. There's nothing. It's just total. I think that might have been the peak. Cause once I got to the stage, I can't lie, I was still nervous. I don't ever want to tell it different. but it was better. And the only thing that I can think, and I'm not a psychologist or anything like that, so this is just me speculating. Only thing I could think is, you know, now I'm here and can't really unring the bell. Just, you got to do it, you know? And so my nerves must have just said, you can't get out of it. And they kind of settled and that's it.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. You know, I used to be a boxer and I'd always get very, very nervous before a fight. But it's a weird thing. It's funny that you mentioned, you used the analogy of the bell ringing. Because once the bell rings, the nerves just sort of dissipate. And now it's game time. So yeah, I think you're onto something.
Yeah, it must have been it.
Okay, so yeah, so you go up, you know, it's the blind audition. It's Nick Jonas, Blake Shelton, and John Legend, Kelly Clarkson in their chairs. Obviously, you know, they're turned back to you in the blind audition. Yeah. What's going through your mind as you're performing? So this was "We've Got Tonight" by Bob Seger. What's going through your mind as you're performing and you see the chairs start to turn?
Oh man, the moment the first chair, because the first chairs turned really pretty early. Thank God. I don't know how my friends do it, that it turned right at the end of the song or didn't at all. Man, I don't know how they worked through that. So luckily for me, they started turning really early. And so it's hard to say what exactly was going through my mind, except to say that I had a plan. Like, I really did. And the people that are part of the show sort of, you know, not the coaches, but people that work with the show, they sort of knew what my plan was. You know, you have, because, you know, they're a national TV show. You can't just go out there just guns blazing. You know, they kind of got to know what's up, you know. And so I had a plan, but when those first chairs turned, I mean, my plan just went out the window and I just got so excited because I knew I made it onto the show. I was expecting, you know, well, I don't know what I was expecting. I was just hoping for one chair and then you made it onto the show. If a chair turns, you're on the show, you know, And so I just got so super excited. You could tell by watching my blind. I think even Kelly went on and on about how excited I got. But also, I don't think they understood for me. And I don't want to put myself like in a special category. Lots of people on that show, lots of people for different reasons and all of them great reasons. And some of them probably more meaningful than mine. But I don't think Kelly or any of them understood what really was at stake for me at that point in my life and in myself, like inside. So that's one of the reasons I just got so super excited. I was like, hey, the page is turning, you know?
I thank you, Todd. I feel compelled to ask you, what was at stake for you?
Oh, just my future. Like, and when I say that again, I don't want to come across like my past was bad or all I know is I was like a 40-year-old guy that just was in a place in my life. And me and my wife were kind of clear about it with our closest friends or some people, I don't even want to call them friends. I hate to say that, but they're just trusted people in my life. You know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah, I get it for sure.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And so we had been fairly candid with them for a couple of years that I don't know what was going on with me, but something was going to have to give. And I just didn't want to become. And then I didn't have any, when I say things, I just don't want people to read too much into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just didn't want to become a statistic, you know, because I was a pastor, you know, for a lot of years. And man, those guys, you open up Google any given day of the week and there's liable to be like a pastor rolled up in the church parking lot and shot himself because he just couldn't deal with whatever. And I just didn't want to be anything like that. And so it almost felt like my entire future was at stake. Like, because it was like, I don't know. The best way I know how to put it is I think God loved me enough to give me the grand gesture that he knew I needed to move forward into something different. And that's what was at stake.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that. So then what was it that made you join Team Blake?
Oh, man, you know, that, I think, was the beauty part of being one of the old guys on the show. Because if you watch The Voice, I don't know exactly how to say this. I'm not certain of their means and methods of putting the show together. I don't know. But you will see that there's going to be a percentage, and it's always a small percentage, of contestants on each season or artists on each season that are older. And then the vast majority are going to be younger, you know, but the beautiful part about me being one of the old guys, because I'm trying to remember on my season, it was like me, another Todd Michael Hall. He was a little older than me. Tanisha, she and I are right about the same age, I think. Maybe she might be a hair older than I am. I'm not sure.
All the
but
teams.
One of the beautiful, Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't want to throw anybody out, but I really do think we were just about the only three kind of really older people on my season, trying to remember, or at least that made it, you know, into the lives and stuff. I think we were about the only ones. But anyway, I think when the blind audition was happening and over, and I had a choice of all four coaches, I could have picked any one. I do think that my life experience had put me in a position where I wasn't just like giddy that Nick Jonas is sitting right here, you know, dying, you know. I didn't know very much. I'm honest about that. I've never, ever backed off of this. I didn't know very much about The Voice. All I knew about the show at first was the chair thing. I knew that there were four at the time. You call them judges, but they teach you pretty quick. You don't call them judges on The Voice. They're coaches, you know. But I remember that. I knew that. So once I made it far enough that I was like, dang, I might be on this show, then I kind of started doing some research, you know. And one of the things I learned in my research is that your odds of going far in the show are better with Blake Shelton. That's if you do research on The Voice. And then number two, which is really most important for me, is I felt like he and I were more on the same level with, like, just as people, our personalities and the way we interact. And because that's like, I just, you know, a second nature to me, just joke around with people. I've offended people and I didn't mean to, you know.
I know what that's like. Trust me.
Yeah. You see what I mean? And that's how he is. He just cuts up and jokes and he is when it's time for business, he does business, but he's not, I don't know how to put it. You know, all I know is like this never aired on TV, but after my blind audition, I had an interview and they asked me why I didn't pick certain coaches, you know, and I thought, you know, Nick, like my kids are picking Nick. You know, like, you know, my kids would pick when I picked Nick. They grew up on Camp Rock and all that stuff.
Yeah.
John is just so cool and particular, and I am not cool at all. And my anxiety would be through the roof if you were going to be real particular. Kelly, I believe it or not, I actually thought about Kelly because I kind of thought if I were to make it all the way to the coach duets in the show, that would be a killer duet. You know,
yeah.
I did kind of think that. But at the end of the day, I kind of thought me and Blake were a lot more alike as people. And then, of course, when I say of course, I don't know how it all works, but just so happened that in my blind audition, Blake pitched last and his pitch was really, you know, so he just sort of won me over. So that's why.
Gotcha. Yeah, makes sense to me. So then what did he teach you?
Oh, you know, I'm going to tell you the honest truth on the show as far as dealing with any of the coaches. But I think one of the things that Blake taught me more than anything is just people that, and I hate to say this because it's not very technical, because really he would have a couple of notes here and there, but I think he's a little more. Now, I don't know because, you know, in my season, by the time it got to live shows, we were remote, and so we're on a screen, and so I don't know how he's dealing with other people, but with me, he was never critical. He was always just very, very encouraging about the things that he felt like you did well, you know? And so Blake is probably one of the first people in my life that just kind of taught me that people want to hear me sing, and so I should do it. Because as far as the songs and stuff, there was a couple of times here and there where he would say, don't, you know, maybe don't do that, like, you know, like when I did my knockout round, Sang Anymore by Travis Tritt, Blake could tell I was kind of shaky at the beginning. And so Blake's, he's business. He let me know, like, you're kind of shaky in the beginning, you know. But as far as like lasting lessons, I just really, whatever the lesson would be, it's hard to put my finger on, but it did build my confidence a ton. You see what I mean? It's hard to say the words.
No, I understand that. You get a mentor or whatever, and it's when someone actually asks you, what did you learn? It's sometimes a surprisingly difficult question to answer. All that you know is that you've been built up in whatever the way has been, and you've been made better. I understand what that's right. Like.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So I saw the video where you're officially announced as the winner. It's you and the other, you know, candidates, and you're with your family. Tell me about what that experience was like of when you knew that you were the winner. And also, you know what? I'd love to know, after the cameras shut off, what did you do? I imagine you celebrated.
Yeah. Okay. So this is always a cool story to me. In the moment, like just before the moment that we won, they had a commercial break. And so I told my kids, my littler kids, they're small. You know, now it's been over two years. And so they're a little bigger, but my baby is still only seven, you know, even now. So I remember telling them that when they announce the winner, don't act ugly, you know, because I didn't expect it was going to be me, you know. So I was like, just smile and clap, and they're going to take us right off the screen, and you can whatever. But I'll go sort of retrograde, I guess is the word I'm looking for. Go back in time a little bit. They give you all this advice that when you do your blind audition, it's probably just going to be a blur. Mine was not. I remember it very well. But when I won, I remember Carson Daly saying, "Todd Tillman, congratulations." And that's all I remember for a minute. And then, okay, so we had planned, and I guess I can say this now because I don't know the statute of limitations on breaking COVID laws, but it was COVID time, but we had planned a party either way, win or lose, Cause I mean, you make it to the finale. If you make it on The Voice, really, you've won. It's hard to do, but if you make it to the finale of the show, man, that's a win, period. So we had a party already planned, food and cake and all the things, And right after the win, there's this little press thing you have to do for maybe a half hour. I don't know. So I did all of my filming from our church at the time. And that really was a very practical choice because the show was fairly adamant that we record from home. And I get it. All the COVID stuff was going on and all the things. And I understood where they were coming from. But at our house, there's 10 people. And I have one child that's just wild. I mean, he's literally just completely feral, and I was just scared my kids are going to tear their stuff up,
Yeah.
I really was terrified. So I sort of made a plea to the production and they allowed me to film from the church because nobody was there either, So the way that church was set up, I just don't live there anymore, but the way it is set up is if you're sort of coming where I was, it's one building and then there's another building. There's sort of like a little breezeway between the two. And I will never, ever forget till the day I die that after the win, we were going to have a party over in the other building. And when I finished that little press thing, I walked out. And when I walked out, hundreds of people were in the church parking lot just cheering and screaming. They knew where I was filming from and in my hometown, And so they were all there and they had put up a little barricade because it was hundreds of people. I guess they were afraid they were going to like bomb rush us or something, And so I walked out that door and like it was just hundreds of people out there and the mayor was there, And so that'll go down in history as probably top 10 most meaningful memories, that I have. And then we went and had cake and food. But as far as the winning, man, look, I'm telling you, it's almost been 3 years and I still don't think that I will not forget. I laid in our bed with my wife the next morning and said, "We won The Voice last night." And it's like, it's not settled. It's like, it's not settled in yet. I still haven't. I don't guess it ever will now. It's been long enough,
Oh, that's wonderful, man. What a great memory.
Yeah.
So, I tell you, you may have already answered it, but why don't I go ahead and ask it anyway? How has winning The Voice affected your life?
Oh, man. In almost every way, in very many ways. First of all, winning The Voice it just really expedited whatever I was going to do because I didn't know how long it was going to take for me to shift from doing one thing to another thing to have a large family to provide for, and so it really expedited that process. Secondly, now I get to sing and travel and I never did. We lived in Mississippi. Now we live near Nashville, Tennessee. We don't live in Nashville. And if you're listening from Nashville, I love you, but I don't want to live in Nashville. it's just too much for me. So we live in a tiny little town about an hour south of Nashville. I'm in there all the time. I drive to Nashville a couple times a week, but we moved. My career changed. We've written books. I've met people I've never dreamed, that I would ever meet. I've sang on the Grand Ole Opry, which is just, insane. That's insane that people like me get to do that, like now you're singing on the Grand Ole Opry, I've recorded songs with some of my, I hate to pick a term for that guy. But my most admired people in different genres of music throughout my life. Like I recorded a song with Rita Springer, who I love. I recorded a song with Colin Ray. That one's not out yet, but it's coming. But that was insane. I love Colin, And so, man, just that's kind of a loaded question. My life has sort of changed in every way, But, there's all the beautiful things, but it's also, I say this all as often as I can. One of the, if not the number one thing, probably the number one thing that works against me and people like me is when do something like win The Voice, then the American public has this general perception that you're set, you know, and the yellow brick road is rolled out. That's just not true, man. Like, it's over 2 years later. I'm not in any contracts with The Voice. I'm just out here grinding and working and scrapping and trying to make things happen like everybody else. And so it's a lot of hard work. And I thriftfully have told 20 podcasters, at least probably more, that every single morning, I wake up and I lay in my bed for about 20 minutes with just debilitating anxiety about my life and the future. And is it going to work out? But you know what? Luckily, I'm kind of ADD. So I'll just get up out of bed and start focusing on something else and get distracted from the anxiety, you know, and just go to work. You know? And that's really the real truth. I'll just get up and go about your day and do whatever you're doing, working on writing or whatever you're doing that day, traveling, and pray it all, you know.
Yeah.
I almost said comes together, but if it'll just stay together, that's fine with me.
I like
what
that.
Has come together.
I like that. That's very real, very honest. I like that time. Yeah. So I'd love to talk about your new single, Dig My Grave. Tell me about it.
Sure. All right. So I think I've already mentioned like 12 times, so I hate to repeat myself. But my life now, I say history, but I hope people understand it's not all history. It's my present as well. But my history is in the church, you know. I did all of my singing in the church. I pastored in the church. I was youth pastor. I was associate pastor. Of course, worship pastor for 100, you know, ever, forever. And I still do tons of stuff like that. I play churches all the time still. So basically the song sort of came out of that, you know, and I mean, don't get me wrong. There's going to be lots of songs, I'm sure, that come out of that. But that's kind of the origin of the song. Because what we wanted to do, one of the co-writers of the song, Clint Brown, had the idea, and he called me. Well, actually, he didn't call me. He sent me one of those voice texts, you know, which I do them all the time when I'm drowning.
Yeah, me too.
I can't type, you know. So he sent his voice saying, hey, what do you think about this? And where we landed is kind of different from what he sent, but it was the idea. And so what we wanted to do is, you can ask the producer that produced on this one. I sat in the room with him. I said, I want this to be like a swampy jam, but it's technically, I've had 50 people go, oh my gosh, that's a country. And I guess it does have a hardcore country sound, but it's technically a gospel song. You know, it's basically a song. It's basically a song about how we can have eternal life. You can dig our grave here, but we don't have to live there. That's not where we don't have to stay there, you know, and that's what it is. And I want it to be like a celebration. And I think it turned out to be like kind of like I wanted, but you know, music is one of those things. It's not really up to me.
Yeah.
Never hears it, I guess.
That's wonderful, Todd. What does the lyric, if you're alive, you're dying, mean to you?
Oh, man. Let's just be honest, bro. Your first breath is one less breath you get. Because when you breathe that first time, you started a journey toward the end. And that's why, you know, it's one of those things that I hope people understand that sometimes the journey is the destination, you know, what all these things that are happening in your life. Because the truth of the matter is, if you're here on this earth breathing, you're dying, man. You got to make everything you can out of it. But also, you don't have to be afraid of it. You know, nobody said it. No one's here off screen or whatever holding a gun to me right now or anything. So it's hard to say. But like, I've never been really fearful of death, you know. Like I said, now it might change if it's imminent and it's like at hand, you know. All right. But the truth of the matter is a lot of people are, and a lot of people. And so we also kind of wanted to be encouraging in that, too. It's not something you have to be afraid of, you know. But ultimately, we wanted to send a really positive gospel message with just a hardcore kind of rocky, swampy country jam feel. And I feel like we pulled it off.
Yeah, that's awesome, Todd. Very cool. You know, I tell you, there's a sort of through line that I've been noticing throughout our conversation here. So I think it's high time I plant a flag on it and we talk about it. How important is faith in your life, Todd?
Oh, it's paramount. Now, you know, it's weird in the world. I mean, we live here in America, and so I've only ever lived in America, so I can only speak for my personal experience. I don't know how it's going, you know, in the Middle East or wherever. I don't know how they do things, but I imagine that there are threads that sort of bind us all together. And I think, when I say all of us, certainly not all of us, but I think faith is just one of those things that it means everything to me. And when I say it means everything to me, it really does. But it's also one of those things that everyone, every person of faith, at least. Let me put that out there. Everyone sort of, if they're true to who they are, who God is, everyone's going to walk that out different, you know?
Yeah.
So one of my main things with faith is, and you'll, if you ever come, especially to a church, if you ever were to roll up on a church and I play in a church that Sunday morning, there's about a 95% chance you're going to hear me say it from the platform, which is, you know, diversity is supposed to be a strength in God's kingdom. And we've sort of made it a weakness. We're supposed to be different and walk it out different. And so I said all that to say, you know, now that I've been on The Voice and there's a lot more eyes on me than used to be. Of course, there's a handful of people who just can't believe I did that or said that or whatever. But I try to remind them, y'all, listen, I'm walking out my faith the best way I know how. And I imagine you are too, but we're going to do it, you know?
Right.
And I think we should sort of embrace that. And so, but as far as the importance of it, I mean, I've been on telephone calls with journalists that at the end of the call, one of their last questions was, so is there anything in your life that wasn't a miracle? I mean, my faith is like, it's set up like it is because I've seen so much and I've experienced so much. And so I'm kind of my mantra as far as that's concerned is you just give God an opportunity, man. It's not, you got to give him time along with it, that opportunity, but you give an opportunity, man, he'll blow your mind. So I don't, but as far as interacting with the world, you know, I have a very clear directive to just love them, period. And so that's what I do the best I can, you know. I don't guess I do it great every day, you know, for the most part, you know how it is. It's easier to love somebody when they're not playing the lottery right at the gas station counter and you're like, hey, come on, you know. All I want to do is pay for my Diet Coke and leave, you know.
that's what I'm drinking, by the way, Diet Coke.
Oh man, I'm a Diet Coke addict. If I could beat Diet Coke, I'd be winning at life, but I can't do it.
Same here.
Yeah.
Let me see. I think, Todd, did I hear you mention a book earlier? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
we wrote a book, came out summer of 2021, I think. Yeah. 2021. I might be lying. It might be 2022. I'm losing my mind. Yeah, we did. Me and my wife wrote one.
Okay, great. What's the book about? Anything you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, it's called Every Little Win. It's basically going, it all came about when our friend, who's also a co-author on the book, Trisha Goyer, she's an author and a brilliant person, you know, and I'm one of my roles is to never, ever be the smartest person in the room. And luckily, it's not too hard to follow. It's not the hardest rule, but Trisha's just brilliant. And so my wife was on her podcast just after the show, just after the win and all the things. And at the end of the podcast, when they were through recording, they were still chatting and Trisha mentioned that we should write a book. And it's really a long story, but what we did was it was really important to me that the book was not like about The Voice. Number one, I think it's technically against the rules that I would do that, like write a book about. And if you do, you can't tell everything. Even though I will say on The Voice's behalf, there's a handful of little things that I guess the general public might be like, ooh, but I mean, really, it's very cut and draw. You know, what we get on TV, we sing the songs, you vote, you know, it is what it is.
That's not it.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a ton of like really secretive things going on. Oh. But so what we did was we wanted to write about all of the things that we felt like, number one, all of the things that really have made us who we are today, not that we're finished or completed, but gotten us to where we are today. That's number one. But number two, which is just as important to me as number one, was we wanted everybody to be able to relate, because not everybody can relate to winning The Voice. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
You know, I mean, I can't even relate to it that well, and I did it, you know? And so what we did was we wrote a book about all of the things. It's almost like a memoir of all the things that we've done and been through and all the little battles that we faced and won along the way. We've had, I mean, she's filed for divorce. We've had kids who are sick that doctors didn't know what in the world to do. We've had several different issues with depression and anxiety and things in our household and in our family. You know, she and I both wrote it. And so it kind of bounces back and forth from me to her. And one of the things that I sort of like about it even now is that there are so many things that you can sort of see our two very distinct perspectives on. Because what would happen is we didn't write it. We didn't sit together, which I love because it's almost like an interrogation at the police department. You know, you're really getting the answers because we're not there playing off of each other. And so Trisha would call her. Trisha would call me and Trisha would say, you know, whenever Egan, which is my oldest son, his name's Egan. So whenever Egan went through this thing that was going on, you know, how did you feel about that? You know, and so I would go into how I felt and what happened. And it's just so cool to sort of see our different perspectives on all those things, you know, because we've just been, you know, we've been married 24 years. When we wrote the book, it had been 22, I guess. And so, you know, 22 years is a lot of time and we've seen a lot of different things together. And so it just was really important to us to write about the things that we're all experiencing that you can count as a win every day, you know.
Totally. Totally get that, Todd. Thank you. Excellent. Excellent. Well, Todd Tillman, how can people find out about you, sir?
Man, I'm on all the social media. Well, not all of it. I mean, there's some weird ones out there. I didn't even know existed. But I'm on like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm on TikTok, for God's sakes, you know, which is, you know, I do things sometimes. I'm not super active on there. I mean, I'm super active on there if you count watching other people's TikToks. But I'm on all there. Or you can go to ToddTOfficial.com. If you just want to listen to music, I'm on Spotify, Deezer, Apple Music, all the everyone's. You know, because distributors, it just goes to all of them. So if you're just interested in the music, you can find me there. Even though my name's spelled crazy, spell it however you want to spell it, you'll find me. You know, it'll work, you know.
Excellent. Todd, this was such a pleasure, man. Thanks so much for taking the time for me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for inviting me on. I appreciate that a ton.
Absolutely. Sounds good, man. Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you'd like to support Eyewitness History, the easiest way to do that would be to subscribe to the show on the podcast player of your choice and leave a review. For more information on Eyewitness History, along with show notes and links to resources, go to ParthenonPodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Podcast Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's History of the Papacy, James Early's Key Battles of American History, and Richard Lim's This American President, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.